This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
6 minutes past 9 o'clock. My guest is in studio. Yes, Azanian People's Organization, ZAPO President Nelfis Qikema is my guest. He'll be joining me in a second. Of course, you're listening to Power 98.7. It is Power Perspective. My name is Denzel Taylor. Karabo and Babsi taking your calls. Remember that studio line to call is 0861-987-000. The WhatsApp number 0833037093. And on Twitter, engage us at PowerFM987. ZAPO, of course, then releasing unveiling their manifesto as well, unlike COPE, and COPE suggesting to us that, yeah, there'll be a stampede if they do it in a small hall. Yeah, but ZAPO is here, and I'm not going to go into much detail because there's so much grounds to cover. Needless to say, I am happy, Nelfis, that you've come in. So thank you so much for that. It's appreciated that you took the time, jacket and all, and looking smart. And here we are. And thank you so much. It's appreciated.
Thank you, Denzel and the Power listeners. I nearly said Black Power listeners. Nearly said that. Nearly.
We're free to say what we want to say here. We're free to say what we want to say here. Starting on that particular note, are you also free to sing whatever you want to sing? Songs. You know, there's so much going on with liberation songs these days. You know, people rush to court once you start singing a song and other things. What's your take on free to say whatever you want to? Are you also free to sing whatever you want to?
No. Our singing is part of our heritage, it's part of our culture, it's part of our struggle.
Yeah.
And it's part of our suffering and our miseries that were, you know, sprung on us by those people who now say that we can't sing about our own suffering and about the kind of things they did to us, the bad things they did to us, the raping of our land, the raping of our grandmothers, of our mothers and our sisters. So nobody can tell us what to do.
The brutality of it.
We're unapologetic about it. No court can tell us.
So where others have stopped singing, you are still singing.
We continue singing. And then even more than singing, as Malcolm X says, we are swinging.
Oh, light. I like that. And if you went to the dictionary, Nelfis, and I'm going to say you must go to the dictionary, you need to go and look up that word where you're swinging. Please do me the honor of checking that particular term up where you're swinging. Let me ask you this. Interesting times in court. And I'll just start here. It's an important conversation to have. But you have a brand and you have a logo. And you have a name, and you have a historical context.
Yes.
Nobody has yet tried to steal your logo, or to steal the name, or to steal an entity that's associated with the ZAPO. So is everything fine where trademarks and things are concerned, where ZAPO is concerned?
Absolutely, Denzel. In fact, they are unstealable.
Yeah.
And then people tried to say Steve Biko was a CI agent.
Yeah.
And when it turned out that there was no way they could condemn or scandalize him, then they tried to steal him, and then they tried to steal the June 16 uprising. They tried to steal everything, but because
Human Rights Day.
Shovel Human Rights Day now. And then you see what happens to
they couldn't steal Robert Sobukwe.
They couldn't. You know, see, just go and see what happened to the Hector Patterson, and then they went and destroyed his tombstone, and then after that, and in the middle after that, they offered there's a better one and a bigger one, and then but Hector Patterson will remain stuck to the heritage of the Black Power movement. So our symbols are unstealable. However, we do not monopolize them. We allow other people to make use of them, because we are saying these truths so that other people can say them as well. Because we want to spread them. We want to mainstream Black consciousness. Black consciousness, as we always say, would want it to be part of governance, would want to be in the academia, in sports, in business, you know, in the faith organization, spirituality, religion, anything and everything you can think about. We want black consciousness to be mainstreamed. In fact, this country is in the shape that it is in today precisely because there is absence of black consciousness in governance in this country, in the economics of this country. There is deficiency of black consciousness.
Let me take you back a little bit, talking about the aspects that you're talking about now. And you're talking about the brutality and the historical context. 1996, and then a little later on in the years as well, South Africa, ZAPO versus the Republic of South Africa. At some point, ZAPO actually took to court through various high courts and the Constitutional Court elements of the Constitution.
Yes.
Challenged elements of the Constitution. In fact, the preamble of the Constitution, which spoke of reconciliation and spoke of elements that suggested that, if you read the Constitution proper, that says we should not engage in going after those who brought upon us the brutality that we have today. In fact, elements of that, and you were saying, we cannot leave that as is. And you went to court. You also went to court, of course, for the aspects of, in the same vein, to challenge aspects of the TRC.
Indeed.
Yeah, to say also that this whole reconciliation thing, and that the mere fact that you could come and say that you killed 57 people, you named them, you said where, you showed maybe where the bodies were, you were given amnesty. You said that could not be left like that. Are you still in that particular space? Because things have moved on. We are 30 years later. And people today, 30 years later, go back to that particular period and say we should have dealt with it differently. You, in fact, were leading those particular times, leading those particular aspects, in fact, going to court and saying we cannot condone the fact that brutality of this nature was brought upon us, and it cannot be just dealt with. It can't be dealt with by the courts even.
Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, as a ZAPO, we are saying nothing has moved on. There are no bygones. Nothing has gone by. If anything has moved on, it has moved backwards and hundreds of years backwards because we are still where we are. We are still landless as the people of this country. And then parts of our land are owned by foreigners. I mean, 72% of the land is owned by, still in the hands of white people. It's a meager and meaningless, you know, and then barren 4% that is in the hands of black people in this country. So what has moved on? You know, we're still where we are, in fact, backwards, actually. And then even you look at the wealth of this country is in the hands of white people, white families, the white ruling class. And upward of 98% of the economy is in white hands. We've got nothing, nothing, nothing as a people. If you were to go out of here, get out of here, and then get in the habit of asking yourself when you walk around town or anywhere in South Africa and ask yourself, who owns this? You know, and nobody in the sense of you and I, you know, black people owning anything in this country, you know, even the little, the nothingness that we own, the government and the ruling party, they're doing everything they can to privatize them. Look at what is happening in SAA. Look at what is happening in Eskom, electricity, the IPPs and that are being introduced, the unbundling that is taking place to ensure that nothing that we as a people are able to cling on to. So therefore, we are still where we are, where we were. In fact, even backwards. I mean, look at the time.
Let me ask you this. What would, when these particular court cases were beginning to happen, 1996, and I think the other one happened in 2000 and some were out there, when you were challenging the preamble of the Constitution and saying there needs to be accountability for what happened under the apartheid system,
indeed,
what would you have wanted to see? I mean, if you had won at that particular point, do you think we would be in a different country?
There is no doubt about it. Because the first thing we would have done as a ZAPO, it would have made it a point that the land as an asset, the principal asset, you know, would have been nationalized in a sense that nobody, no individual, no foreigner owns the land. The land is owned by the people as a whole through the agency of the state. And then the land is distributed, you know, by means of need and usage. For instance, for residential purposes, for research purposes, for commercial and industrial purposes, and agricultural purposes. That's what you would then do. And then those companies and other other institutions which would be having any ownership to land, those would have been converted into lease agreements of 100 or 150 years, but nobody should ever own the land as an entity.
What's different between what you're saying to me and the EFF on the issue of land for where need and usage is concerned? Because the EFF speaks the language that you're speaking now.
I'm glad you are saying they are speaking the language we are speaking. Then you should then be asking what is different, what they are saying to ours, because ours is ours.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's the same.
Remember,
that's why I'm asking what's the difference within the concept.
We've been saying this for over 50 years as the Black Consciousness Movement, and that is why we opposed the Balkanization of the country, because we said Azania is one indivisible land. We talk about the unification of our country, because we believe this is one Azania, and we're talking about one nation in one Azania and one people. And then that's why we're opposed.
That was the slogan.
That's why we're opposed. And it's not just a slogan, it's a principle.
Yeah.
It's a principle. And going back to the case we were talking about, for instance, what we're going to do, there was no way, as a ZAPO, we would get into a free country and then still retain apartheid judges. We would not have done that. There was no way. We would not have done, retained, you know, the apartheid, you know, civil servants, you know, some of whom had no education to show for it, except that, you know, they were pushed through and through and through, you know, through the bus cap. Would not have done that. Would not have retained, you know, the apartheid generals in the army, and then have our Azanla generals, our MK generals, our upper generals being juniors, you know, to those people who know nothing but to, you know, to do apartheid. Would not have done that. It would have been a clean slate altogether, clean slate.
So Nelvis, then help me here, right?
The sunset clauses would never have ever taken place. Yeah, the sunset clauses, the sell-out project that you saw.
That government of national unity would not
and
have.
And the TRC you were talking about came as a result of that. Not because it wanted to help black people, but because it wanted to erase and bracket justice. That is why Mxenge, Steve Biko, Unkhuputse, Tiro, you know, could not have any justice whatsoever. I mean, if you're looking at the killers of Unkhuputse Tiro, you know, in fact, they remain they remained in Nia. You know, those guys were in Boss. They got promoted, and then in Nia, they never went to jail. P.W. Botha never went to jail. Peg Botha, in fact, they all hid in the ANC. They went to join the ANC. Der Kutsie ended up joining. Those are flak. People ended up joining the ANC. There's the other one who was even given refuge and paid by the government 40,000 a month. You know, out of the coffers of people. These were the murderers of the people.
So let me put something to you. When people have a critique of 30 years of the ANC in government, and I have to say this to you. That often people will say of a ZAPO that a ZAPO is and has the right. A ZAPO is and has the right for and is capable of producing more penetrating critique of our past than the ANC because of the stances that you have taken, not engaging 94,
indeed,
not engaging and taking on aspects of the Constitution. So fundamentally, when people look at you as an organization, people would suggest that your organization penetratively can speak more thoroughly of our historical past. When the ANC says, we came into government and we were not ready, we didn't know, we had no clue as to what we were doing, and so we paddled along until we found out what we were doing. And so, in essence, that is the argument also for why there was a sunset clause and the engagement with this or that or the government of national unity and the process of a civil service that was combined of whatever. You're saying, get rid of, we would have got rid of everything, shipped them out, and we would have taken over. And then the ANC comes out and says, you know, we couldn't do it in 30 years. We struggled. And, you know, some of the problems that we still have now in 30 years are related to the issue of we didn't know. What do you make of that particular aspect that they give as an excuse?
It's cowardice. It's laziness to govern. I mean, look, how could you be dying all these years? I mean, you're fighting, you're bleeding, you're dying. Mm. And only that when you are now free, you take back your land and your country. You now say you don't know how to do it. But if you didn't know how to do it, why did you stand in there in the first place? Why didn't you surrender to other people like Azapo who would have known how to do it?
Mm.
Why did? I mean, there's no excuse. If you didn't know how to do it, why did you take it?
Mm.
Now, for instance, how can an organization, the oldest liberation movement in the continent, say it doesn't know how to do it?
Mm.
The oldest in the continent. I mean, look at all these other organizations, Frelimo, you name them, and then they were able to go in there. They never, ZANU-PF never relied on Ian Smith. They never did.
Mm.
They never did. You go to the Communist Party of China. They never relied on the Kuomintang. I mean, you go to Russia. They never relied, you know, on the whites. So why would we do? Look again, Denzel.
Yeah.
You are talking about a liberation movement that had ties in Zambia to an extent that they were almost part of government, in the structures of government in Zambia for all the years they lived there. They even had factories, you know, bone factories, furniture factories. In fact, in some instances, they were lending money to the Zambian government. Why wouldn't they be able to do it?
Mm.
It's only because there was a sellout project and people unable to do the kind of things they needed to do. You did not have to go to school or anywhere to know that you need to return the land to the people, repossess it.
Mm.
You know, you don't need anything and any miracle to be able to redistribute the wealth to the people.
And then Nelvis, you know,
oh,
they're,
come
they're,
on.
No, I get you.
You know, I mean, 5 million people, 30 years into democracy, 5 million people, and those are black people, are living in shacks.
Mm.
No running water, no electricity, no schools, no clinics. Oh, come on. Mm. Come on.
You remind me of a biblical chapter because I'm going to put this to you. You remind me of, you know, when the people had to choose of who needed to be freed. And there was the prisoner, and of course there was, of course, Jesus on the other side, and choices were made.
Barnabas.
Yeah, and choices were made. And this was a politician who particularly showed me or pointed this particular, you know, issue out. You speak as one who, when the political parties were paraded in front of the electorate in South Africa in 1994, you never partook in that.
We didn't.
So you were free of that particular space.
We would not be part of the sellout. We would not commemorate apartheid.
But when people were paraded in front of the electorate chose, and they chose that party who you today are speaking in so much disdain of. They chose that particular party to the extent of giving them a two-thirds majority.
What did they do with it?
Yeah, what I'm saying is that besides what they did with it, and we can get to that conversation, yes, there was a choice made by people who were in this country, mm-hmm, who looked at all the options in front of them, including the PAC in front of them, and said, you know what, we can see them, they're negotiating. We see P.W. Botha in the pictures. We see Nelson Mandela. We can see Kodesa 1. We can see Kodesa 2. Chris Hani was in Mthatha saying, I don't know what's going on there. Chris Hani eventually killed. All of these things happening. But when there was a vote, the ANC got 2/3. How do you explain that component then? Was it merely that they sold their message differently? Did they buy into something, particular promises that, you know, were made but did not materialize later? Why was, if people were supposed to understand this animal that's in front of them, why did they still vote for this animal?
Well, I think it was a case of choosing, you know, of thinking that it's better the devil you know than the one you don't know, particularly the one you know that put you through hell. Mm. So at that point in time, then people were saying, look, if we have to choose between all of these, would rather choose these who are part of the liberation movement.
They could have gone PAC.
Yes, they could have gone PAC, you know, and they didn't. Mm. They chose. I remember there was also the Mandela factor, and then there was also the ANC factor itself. I mean, being the oldest liberation movement in the country, the richest liberation movement in the country, and you can look back and do some investigations and look at the monies that were invested in those organizations at that point in time. So there was nothing wrong. Mm. I mean, with the people choosing in the manner that they did. Mm. But today, go again back to the people, hear out what are they saying. Mm. It's the people themselves who are saying, we made a mistake. Mm. It's them who are saying so. It's them that who are saying so. In fact, we've been sold out. We've been given a raw deal with this constitution that came with these people, you know?
The preamble that you challenged.
Yes. I mean, South Africa belongs to all who live in it. I mean, go to Section 25, you know, a one in bracket, and then it starts by reading on the property clause. It starts by reading, nobody will be deprived of their property. Ah, come on, Denzel. You know, tell me, we've been deprived of our land, robbed of our land. How can we write that into a constitution which tells you we never wrote that constitution?
How else do you think what the ANC was trying to achieve within the Unity Project could have been achieved if they've gone a different route? How would the Unity Project have been achieved, the Reconciliation Project been achieved, if they did not go that particular route that they went?
I don't know what reconciliation you're talking about, because 30 years into democracy, there is no reconciliation in this country. Mm. Reconciliation as we see it in Azapo, the reconciliation would have happened, you know, if there was parity, you know, in terms of the land ownership. If there was parity in terms of the wealth of distribution of this country, if there was parity in terms of the type of housing we live in, others are living in mansions, and then we continue to live in Mikuku. We continue, you know, to relieve ourselves into, you know, the back toilets, into pit toilets. Our children continue to die in pit toilets when they go to school. You know, you see images of our children crossing rivers when they've got to go to school and carry their books and their clothes on their heads. Mm. You see families who have to cross rivers with coffins on their shoulders, on their heads. Look at the humiliation that black people still go through in this country. You know, we have not had an instance where we've been able to restore our humanity and our dignity. Mm. And yet, Section 10 of the Constitution talks about the right to human dignity.
Mm. I'm going to take two callers. Let me take Colleen Ermelo. Let's put the headphones on, Nelvis. Loving the passion that Nelvis has come to studio with. Love it. Colleen Ermelo. Colleen?
My brother, greetings to you and Brother Nelvin.
Sure, Chief.
Sheikh, thanks, Koli.
Yeah, my brother. Brother Denzel, you always remember me most. I always tell you about the need for us to embark on a change and emancipate ourselves from mental slavery.
Mm.
Yes, my brother. My people have been tricked all the time. Hence, Sobu went out of the ANC because he saw that our people are being tricked. And 1994 was evident of the trick. So, I'm saying to my brother there, Biko, Bantu Bonke Biko, taught us about African philosophy, which is the consciousness. And I would like to add on my brother there to say, the consciousness is Ubuntu, the systems of Ubuntu, Brother Denzel. What is Ubuntu? Ubuntu is love, the opposite of hate. Ubuntu is tools instead of weapons. Ubuntu is positivity and instead of negativity. That's Ubuntu, the systems of Ubuntu. And we can only welcome our fellow white brothers and sisters only if they pay allegiance to this country and give back what belongs to us so that we end the townships, as far as camps, because we don't want townships. We want the proper settlements, not townships.
Colin Amalo, let's take Golden Miles Buddha. Golden?
Yeah, brother, how's it?
Good, good, bro.
Look, the Afrikaner apartheid architect outmaneuvered our leaders. And those that they could not outmaneuver, they call for them to be eliminated, like Chris Hani, Steve Biko, and Robert Mangaliso Sibukwe. They even outmaneuvered out at Kodesa. They are even up to today, in the 21st century, they are busy outmaneuvering us, you know. And they've made sure that black people must never unite. That is why we never had here in the Transvaal, we never had a Bantu stand. The Bantu stand was in all the other provinces. You know, here we had a location zone and extension stand where they separate you in a zone, a Zulus section, Xhosas, other section, Pedis, and so on, you know. And until such time we get out of this denialism as black people that we ourselves are easily outmaneuvered. Doesn't matter what academic, intellectual achievement you have. They've simply just outmaneuvered us. For what? You know, there was a 76 uproar. My opinion, and I'm entitled to my opinion, if there was unity amongst our black leaders, I suggested that they should have, after the storm has settled, go to this Afrikaner architects and tell them, look, we are going to make sure that our children is taught in Afrikaans in protest so that we can get into your head and outmaneuver you from inside your head.
Golden Mouse Budu. Nelvis, there's a line there between Xoli and Golden Mouse Budu and it's about black consciousness. And not just black consciousness as we would understand it in the textbooks, but maybe something that's forgotten about black consciousness, in which the Azapo political party, the Azapo movement, was so critical in, and it was the development of black consciousness into an explicit societal direction. To engage it in that particular space, not to keep it maybe within the ranks of whatever, but black consciousness in society. That I think is something we don't necessarily engage too much about. But you can see when people do reference, they do speak about a Zapo in that particular way. It never stayed with the educated or, you know, the highers. It was able to reach the societal aspects of it, and not enough credit was got. They made comments and stuff like that, and I want you to comment on that. But within that context of black consciousness within a societal direction as well, I want to ask you this. Zapo and capitalism and capitalists and the capitalist movement, and if you begin to look at a ZAPO over a period of time, one might think that a ZAPO would have been against capitalism even more so than the system of apartheid in essence, because the system was a system, you could beat it. You couldn't beat capitalism. Capitalism was a way of life which made you poor and kept you at the bottom. That particular aspect of capitalism, black consciousness, and the thread through time, have we given it enough? You know, have we given it enough air to breathe? Because I think it's an important element that we don't talk about.
Thank you. Oli, I will deliver your ASAPO membership myself.
Right?
There's nothing to say.
Yeah.
I mean, Brother Miles, and please increase the volume. We are not hearing much of you these days. Increase the volume.
Yeah.
Come, let's hold hands together. Now, they have said it. Black consciousness is the way of life.
Yeah.
And it being the way of life, you get the solutions from within there, black consciousness itself.
Mm.
Because what we are saying, and what Steve Biko was saying, and what ZAPO is saying, is that as black people, we must see ourselves as self-defined.
Mm.
Nobody must tell us who we are. We say who we are as we see ourselves and as we feel and as we believe who we are in terms of our own worth as human beings. And we believe in self-determination, national self-determination. Nobody else is going to tell us what must we do about our country, about our resources, about our health, and about ourselves and about our country itself. And so had we been having a black consciousness, would not be having the kind of things that you're having today, where you have people given the power for 30 years, you know, say, do what you have to do, and they still go back to the people through, you know, a public, national public hearings, tell us what must we do, tell us what must we do. No, we know what has to be done, liberate the people.
Mm.
Now, the issue of capitalism, capitalism is about, you know, the ownership, you know, of the wealth of the country and monopolizing it into few hands and then, you know, reduce everybody else into slaves and into slavery and then get them to sell their labor power. That is what is happening here today. And in fact, as if that was not enough, you still get people, forcing us to live on 350 rand. You know, about 9 million people in this country are on 350 million, and then about 28 million people in this country, you know, are 38 million as a whole on grants.
You could argue,
and we're saying no. That cannot happen.
And you could argue that...
What about our humanity? What about our dignity?
We
don't want grants. We want this land. It is ours. We want the companies, the industries, the factories. You know, we don't just want work. But we want work, but more than work, we want to own the wealth of this country. It can happen. China, in no time, it was able to take 800 million people out of poverty. Look at China today. Look at China today.
Would you say that those particular programs go and enhance the class divisions and actually exacerbate the class divisions and create even further class divisions? The irony of needing to fight and get rid of these class divisions and particularly along racial lines, and then you entrench it by actually stabilizing issues with a 350 grant. What's your take on that?
Yeah, that's exactly what he's saying. Somebody somewhere who is our own, who is sent there by us, we have invested our power in him. You know, there's a level of trust between us and them who are in power. What do? They look at us and say, no, they deserve 350 rand. and they must still queue for it. And then they give you the 350 rand, and then before you get home, you have paid it into the taxi, all of it, it's gone. You know, and they look at us and they say we deserve RTPs.
And there's no dignity in standing in a queue for 350.
There is no dignity.
Yeah.
There is no dignity at all.
In fact, it strips you of everything.
Absolutely. And that is happening because the person himself who is in power, state power,
does not
respect themselves.
What do you say then, Nelvis, to the argument that says, you know, government only has an extent to what size its pockets are and how deep its pockets are? And that's from the one argument from government, that it only has limitations to the kind of funds that it has. And on the other side, somebody might be hearing us and saying, you know, it strips you of your dignity to go and stand for 350. And the person who is in that particular queue to who we are saying that says, but I need the 350. I will stand here. You don't know what difference it makes in my life. What do you make to those two arguments?
Now, Gazapo says, it's simple. We'll eliminate that. It will not happen. And we will outlaw the shacks because shacks are a crime against black people. It's simple. We will stop what is happening in this country, the wastage that is happening in this country, where people dig our minerals out of the land and then they throw them into Europe without any value added to them. And then we will change that system. The extractive economy will change it. What we'll do, and then we will keep them closely to our minerals, keep them closely to us. We'll dig them out and build factories and industries in our country and beneficiate those minerals and add value, such that when we sell them, we can then sell them 20 times of their value, you know, than if they were just going naked. But we'll also be able to give thousands of jobs to the local people. Also, we would be able to not promote what is happening now, the multinational system of capitalism, the monopoly, you know, of the wealth and capital, you know, by the white ruling class, where instead of taxing them, you lower the tax from 28 to something like 23%. You give them tax holidays. You don't end there, but you give them land for free. You know, you don't end there. You know, you even go further and ensure that the monopolization of white monopoly continues. Now we are saying no, as a Zapo, we change the structure of the apartheid economy. We will encourage the small business enterprises, because research has shown that economies grow when you inject life in that aspect of the economy, where you and I are able to, so you know, put up those enterprises, were able to absorb people in the townships, in the villages, into jobs, and then you fund that. But it does not end there. You go into the rural areas. You ensure that you're getting our families there, you know, into cooperatives, and they're able to sell their produce, you know, to government must step in.
Got you.
Tractors and things.
Yes. Here's the conundrum, the dilemma, right, Nelvis, is in essence to engage all of that you were talking about.
Yes.
And a lot of people in a lot of literature will write about Azapo as the custodians of black consciousness, of the flag bearers of black consciousness, to fly the memories of Steve Biko, Abraham Nkopotso Tiro, Vuyelwa Mashalaba,
yes,
and all of them, Harry, and in essence, the way to achieve what you were saying is through the ballot box. And whilst you are the custodians of black consciousness, the flag bearers, the heir to all of this information and intellectuality and the black consciousness, you know, movement, and the safekeepers,
yes,
of those people's dreams and those people's literature and their lives, you need to get to where you were talking about through the ballot box.
Yes.
And we're about to have an election. What is it then that you need to say either differently and or to engage differently with the electorate, that all of this, and nobody can argue with black consciousness, every single caller here who will phone in might have a different definition of it, but when it's broken down, when black people, and it speaks to the respectability of black people and their pride and ownership of who they are and what they are, nobody can argue with that. Mm-hmm. But you've got to do it through the ballot box.
Yes.
How then do you get there to bring that particular message across of that particular nature to get people to vote for you? Because at the moment, one vote in 2000, what were the years? I think in three or four elections. I think the last election where you would have had a representation would have been maybe 2014, somewhere around that particular point. How do you get people to engage the conversation and for it to then transfer into the ballot box speaking to what you want?
Remember, Denzel, our results in elections as AZAPO is not a reflection of the rejection of AZAPO or of our message, but it's the function and the structure of elections themselves.
Mm.
Because remember, first of all, that the wealth of this country, like I said earlier, is in the hands of the white ruling class, 98% of that. And again, elections are a money game. Money speaks.
Mm.
You know, you need money to be able to. You don't. You know, just to put up a. I'm not talking about the stadium itself.
Mm.
Just to put up a stand, you need about 300,000. Just the stand itself.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about the people throughout the country, the buses. You know, and remember, AZAPO has no Busasa to run to, has no Gupta to run to,
no Rupert's,
no VBS to run to, no Oppenheimer to run to.
Mm.
And then look at the Zondo Commission. You've got the report there that all along these other parties were getting these monies, you know, through the stealing, the looting of the resources, and then corruption money.
Mm.
You know, we're reliant on no blood money and no corruption money.
Mm.
However, now AZAPO is saying, we will not complain because that is so.
Mm.
You know, we will, because we went out there and we were able to face tanks, you know, with bare hands, you know, bullets and things. Even this time around, we will not complain. We'll go in there and play. We'll rely on our people. You know, through crowdfunding, we'll talk to black business and we'll tell them, look,
and that won't equal the playing ground. Because the irony is that, you know, all of these other organizations will speak of white monopoly capital in the way that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle of the night, they will make a phone call to white monopoly capital, and white monopoly capital will fund their political party.
Yes.
So in essence, you're not making the phone call in the middle of the night. The playing field then is not equal. And if you're saying the playing field is not equal and those are the results then that you have to then get, it just means that continually you're going to get the results that you're getting.
That's right. What we say is that as we're doing all this, that's why we call this thing is called a struggle. It requires patience, Denzel. It's called struggle.
Mm.
And then some people say,
In mine and your lifetime, will we see the emergence of something in mine and your lifetime?
If it doesn't happen in my lifetime, somebody else must take my gun and move forward.
Mm.
If it doesn't happen in his lifetime, it must continue. It will continue and continue until it happens.
Mm.
So the point that we are making, Denzel, is that remember, as we're doing all this, remember, in the past, we did not have the slice of black business that we're having. It's growing.
Mm.
It's not what it should be, but it's growing, right? And remember also, the literacy rates in the country are growing. Remember also, you and I, the people of yesterday, who knew nothing but Mandela and apartheid, are dying. You know, and then there are new people who are learned, new generations who are learned, who are now a understanding change for what it is. And they need it. They call for it and they work for it. And that's why you are seeing now, or all of a sudden, even the ruling parties of yesterday, they are now beginning to struggle in terms of the vote. And then they're not even sure
can
that
I
they
ask
will
you a
make
question,
the 50%.
Elvis?
So what I'm saying to you is that there is also the human factor, you know, the mindset of the people, there is a shift that is changing, and they are moving towards Azapo because they are beginning to say, hey, Azapo, you were right, by the way, you know, there is no land in this thing. This constitution, you were right. This shacks, you were right. Our dignity and our humanity that is there, Azapo, you were right. That's what we're beginning to hear.
Let me ask you this question and help me with it a little bit. The younger generation, you spot on, is engaging differently with the liberation struggle and the times that were. And they're questioning a lot. And in fact, what they're beginning to ask of political parties is, how and what are you doing for me to take me forward? Is the message, though, of black consciousness, which is a different message from capitalism and progress?
Yes.
Black consciousness is progress beyond, and it's on a different spiritual higher level. Black consciousness, it is not the
it's
materialistic.
A supreme spiritual
yes,
message.
We are not talking about the simplistic materialistic issues here, but for young black people who then come from rural areas, who understand the poverty where they come from. They have got an education. They are emerging. They are engaging in materialistic things as well. They are not engaging black consciousness as a first. They are understanding who they are, engaging differently, but they are wanting not to be left in the poverty trap, and they're trying to escape that. Are they leaning towards your message, which is black consciousness,
absolutely,
whilst they are engaging,
absolutely,
you know, getting out of the poverty trap.
Remember, black consciousness is a philosophy. It is a way of life. You don't have to call it by name for you to live it. It's what you live. It's your essence. It's your reality.
Yeah.
You know, it's your blackness. That's what it's all
this
about.
This thing around
me. Yeah. You know, you don't have to know it by name. You don't have to read it. You live it. Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
And that is why in not so long ago, you had all over the country, you know, the Fees Must Fall the movement.
Which took on an Azapo element.
Absolutely.
And I saw the spark of an Azapo spirit there.
You know, you got
the symbolism, the language.
Symbolism, the language and everything.
Was
Steve
Azapo.
Biko, Azapo. That's what you got. And they had the connection with us. So what were you seeing there? What were you seeing there? Is that a black consciousness, you know, is springing up. Black consciousness is germinating as a seed, even outside Azapo. It's not dependent and located and locked in Azapo itself. But, you know, it takes grip of society and it's sprouting out there. You look at the workers, you know, in Marikana, listen to what they are saying. Listen to what they are singing. There is black consciousness for you. The young people you are talking about, 70% of them as we speak right now are unemployed. Even when they are done with their studies, they have no job to get because when they go there, they are demanded 5 years experience and this and that, you know, and nobody's able to give them that. Most of them are in internships, in learnerships after they've done their studies.
And when they are in that predicament, Nelvis, when they are in that predicament of broken, having studied, having engaged, and you have done everything to try to get somewhere, and you haven't, and you fall back, understanding that you have the papers and you want the job, and you don't get it, how then, when you need to drop something? When you need to lower the bar, maybe you wanted to be, you know, a manager because you had the proper qualifications. But now somebody is saying, you know what, I have a petrol attendant job for you. Mm-hmm. And so you begin to drop your standards so that you can engage the economy and you have something in front of you. So mm-hmm. people are beginning to have conversations with themselves mm-hmm. about the qualification they have and that particular job that they're getting. And it's not equal to the extent that it speaks to each other. Mm-hmm. What do they drop? Is it the black consciousness aspect of what they drop, that higher being, that spirituality, or do they hang onto it despite this aspect? Or is it the answer that, you know what, they do what they must because they have embodied the issue of black consciousness?
Yes. Now, first of all, remember that the parents who sent these children to school, mm. you know, they've got nothing. Mm. I mean, the parents and, you know, what do you call this?
Well, their hopes and dreams lie in the child.
They've got to tighten the belt that they don't have, mm. you know, to send these children to school and hoping that they will come back and then help them to escape poverty. It never happens, mm. you know. And then again, which is, they get the degree, nothing happens, they don't. Mm. In fact, even when they're at schools, they get shot at bullets, they must fight to get mm. through that organization, which is why Azapo is saying education mm. must be free and compulsory from kindergarten mm. up to the first degree, you know, mm. at a tertiary level, and because we know what education can do to a people, mm. you know, you don't just have to look for a job once you have an education. You can actually create.
But people
jobs
are not finding
science.
The job. The irony of what you've just said, Nelvis, yeah. is that you know what education can do for yeah. a people, and yet it's not doing it.
Yes, and that's why Azapo is also saying, you know, to create these jobs that we are talking about, the first thing, one of the first things that Azapo will do mm. is to abolish the provincial governments, the middle tier of mm. government, because that was created to appease, you know, the white sentiment, the white fear, and so that we have some Bantustans, you know, so that looks some Bantustans, something like, so that they're able to retain the Western Cape, and then mm. the IFP is able to retain KwaZulu-Natal and yeah. so on. You abolish that, and once you abolish those, mm. and then you take all those resources in the middle tier, mm. because South Africa is overgoverned, you know, it's too small to have 10 governments and 10 presidents, mm. you know. So you take all that money, mm. which is an upward of 800 billion, actually 795 mm. billion rands that goes into this middle tier of the provincial government. You what you leave there, it's simple administrators, not governments. Mm. Simple administrators and fewer. And then you take all the money, those funds, mm. and then the human resources, the technicians, the engineers, the artisans, and then you take all the managers and the CEOs, you take all those people, you channel them to local government, because this is a developmental state. Mm. And in a developmental state, the most important layer is the local government. That's where mm. service delivery takes place, the coal face of service delivery. That's what Azapo mm. is saying. And then we say, as we do that, we also need to ensure that there's accountability, which is why you need to ensure that the president is elected directly, not indirectly as it is happening mm. now, so that a ruling party can use its own factional battles and remove a president of the people. That should never happen. The same with the mm. mayors. There must be accountability. There's no accountability at the moment. In fact, there is conflation or the mix mm. up between state and party. That's why you've seen in the Zondo Commission, mm. even the intelligence, which is supposed to be protecting us as a people and the country as a people, is messed up, is compromised, because some of them are involved in stealing the money with bags, you know, the mm. slush funds, and they run away with it, and they are running, you know, party battles, and they go and then discredit that leader and that leader, mm. factional battles. That's why Azapo is saying, we are going to clean politics in this country. Gotcha. We are going to reintroduce, restore integrity in politics in this country.
Nelvis, we are at the end of the show. I'm looking at your pen. I think in all the excitement and the conversation, the pen might not have made it as well. Maybe I need to get you a new pen. Promise I'll get you a new pen. Nelvis, it's been an honor and a pleasure chatting to you. And like I say, you know, when people do write and speak about a Zapo, they speak about the custodians of that particular time, the custodians of black consciousness, the flag bearers of black consciousness. I'm going to wish you well in the election, but I'm also going to say I'm going to bring you back closer to the election so that we then begin to engage as to how your footprint's beginning to happen, how the money begins to flow into your account so that you can get posters up and all of those other things. Thank you so much for coming on to Power Perspective tonight.
Thank you very much. I've been listening to Sam Cooke. A change is going to happen. I was born by the river in a small tent, and like that river, I'm still running even today and forever. But change is going to happen come 29 May.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.